Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Mbuga. This evening we'll talk about immigration in Africa. And with us tonight is Nelly Mora Nyangorora. She's a Nairobi-based independent journalist. Welcome to the show, Nelly.
Thank you very much, Douglas, and thank you so much for hosting me once again on your show.
You're very much welcome. And also joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's joining us as usual from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me, as always.
You're welcome. As I said, looking at migration in Africa, it's a very complicated picture in Africa because recently we heard of people crossing the oceans into Europe. In just 2 days, 8,000 migrants, including an estimated 2,000 minors, crossed the border into Spain, North Africa. That's nearly four times the number that made the same trip last year. And there is another issue also of tens of thousands, actually, of young Africans, especially ladies, being shipped to work in the Gulf. So let me begin with Suleiman. What do you make of these people fleeing the continent?
I think, Douglas, that is an indictment to the leadership on the continent of Africa. First of all, these are the young people of the continent, most productive workforce, most energetic, some of them most educated, who are migrating. Amidst all this confusion, much as it has been a continuous flow, these young people, there seems to be little attempts from our African government to stop the flow of these kids. And one of the most difficult part about it, or one of the most painful part, is that one of the push factors are the leaders themselves. The leaders, many of them who are arrested, many of them who don't have policies which can stop these young people from leaving the continent. So as we can see, most of the push factors are still prevalent, and even the pull factors are still prevalent in the countries where they are going. But when you scrutinize them, you see that they are all circling around the issues of government, issues of economic development. So long as our countries are still not geared towards developing our economies, the flow of young people will continue for better life in Europe.
Nelly, what's your take generally on this issue?
Yeah, it's quite disheartening to see reports that despite the dangerous venture of trying to cross the Mediterranean into land, for instance, in Italy, many people still try to do this. And even we see that they didn't criminalize anyone who tries to rescue the migrants who are drowning. But still, despite this, many people still risk to get to this land. And those who succeed, many times we see reports that they don't lead any good life. Some are engaged in jobs that are too manual and have no homes. They even are homeless. But still, we see that pregnant women, the children, and the vulnerable groups still try to risk it all to leave. For Kenya, for instance, we have seen that there's a lot of migration into the Gulf countries. And this is because of the rising unemployment in this country. And I think that is also indicated across Africa. But because of the rising unemployment levels, because of the lack of meritocracy in employment and the rising nepotism in these employment cases, we find that those who feel like they really have to provide for their families after they have sacrificed to take them to school, look out to go out. They think that it's green out there. And so because of this situation, we have unscrupulous agents who have taken advantage of this, and they have taken people into this country, especially the Gulf region, where they have engaged these people into workforce that has been very frustrating to many. In fact, there are reports that many get tortured out there. There are those who are even denied food. There are many girls who sexual exploitation. And reports have always been out there, even in the media. But regardless, people still want to leave the country. And the irony is that, as if many others, especially from China, are coming in to do some of these menial jobs, like if I even Chinese walking staff along the streets, doing things that the locals could do. But the Kenyans, or mostly Africans, still feel that working outside or abroad is far more more attractive to them. Maybe it's easier than working or getting a job in your own country.
Yeah, Suleiman, what's even more annoying, according to some people, is that some governments are encouraging these girls, young women, to ship them in the Gulf and go there, regardless of what happens to them there. As Nelly mentioned, there are cases of sexual abuse, there are slave wages, they work 24 hours nonstop. Why would that be the case?
You see, one of the biggest problems is that the bottom line is that many of our African economies have failed to grow appropriately, have failed to grow to the extent that they can create enough employment for the young people. Because of that, many of the leaders in Africa are facing pressure. Many of these young people are growing day and night. Many of the education institutions are churning out thousands and thousands of young people who are looking for jobs. The politicians don't have the ability to create enough jobs. Because of that, they feel that is a pressure-releasing mechanism. If some of them can go out, the pressure on them can be reduced. They don't care where these young people are going. I'm yet to see a parliament on the African continent which tables a motion which is going to discuss the immigration of people from their own countries. It has not been done. I'm yet to see a country where a government prepares conditions or prepares their embassies, where embassies will be helping children or young people who have migrated to those particular countries. The countries, the leaders seem to be aloof. All they are interested in is getting remittance, because some of the remittances which these countries are pushing in, if you look at countries like Kenya, we have got a good workforce which has migrated out. The remittances are so heavy, they are even bigger than the international aid which is coming into the country. So many of the leaders would wish to have that remittance more than looking or stopping it. Because if they stop it, it is a major contribution on the budget of the country. So that is why on the gross on the gross domestic product, because it is bringing in income on the budget of the country. So they wouldn't wish to have them stop. So that is one of the dilemmas which the countries are facing. So long as there are no particular systematic efforts made to improve the economies of these countries, you won't stop them. Number two, some of the countries are faced with instabilities. Countries like Burundi, until recently, they had instability, so people were forced to move out. Countries like South Sudan, countries Yemen, Somalia. So those are automatic migrating countries. You cannot stop them, and even the leaders themselves don't have control on them. So if they cannot stop them, how can they look after them when they are already in the countries where they have run? So that is the dilemma which the young people and the continent are facing.
Nelly, talking of those who are being shipped to do odd jobs elsewhere, what's the feeling in Kenya, and what's the government position? Are they encouraging, as Suleiman says, people go so they can get remittances from there?
I agree with what Suleiman said in relation to remittances. We find that the Central Bank of Kenya has mainstreamed remittances into the budget. For instance, in the month of April, we see that the remittances from the diaspora was clocking almost $300 million. And we see that most Kenyans are looking to leave the country, to seek employment outside. And when you look at the application for the green card, about 22.4 million Kenyans applied for the green card, or Africans applied for the green card yearly. And so this, most times they end up going to provide workforce for those in these developed countries. And they are exploited in the process, because some go as illegal immigrants. They're not documented, so they cannot even seek redress, because when they seek redress, they fear repatriation. And so the cycle continues. When they go out there, those who have been left behind believe that those out there are making a lot of money. So there's a lot of pressure for those who are working abroad. And because there's that pressure, they have to do so many other manual jobs so that they can be able to sustain the families they have left behind. We see that the African Union attempted to come up with a mechanism or a policy framework to control that, but we see that despite all that, it is not working. Many people still are migrating, and this has led to brain drain, and many professionals, instead of contributing to their countries of origin, because they've been educated there, trained there, and skilled there, they are contributing to innovation in the countries they have left for. And so we see that the imbalance of development will still favor rich countries, because they mainly rely on labor and even intellectual input from those who migrate there for greener pastures.
Now, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing migration from Africa and factors leading to that. And my panelists are Nelly Mora Nyangorora, a Nairobi-based independent journalist, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Washington. Suleiman, you want to say something?
Yes, I wanted to add on from what Nelly said. He said the intervention by the European community. He was talking of European Union. He was talking of, I'm sure he's talking about the European Emergency Trust Fund, which was created in 2015, and it provided funds to about 26 countries in Africa in relation to the immigration of people. It is going, I think, up to 2021 this year. It was supposed to support various projects like vocational training, training of small business entrepreneurs, training young people in skilling young people in various capacities. But the way Nelly has said, that one doesn't seem to have an impact. As she has said, and even the reports which are there, the European Union has just released, I think, a report on the effect of that European Trust Fund, and it shows that actually, instead of stopping the migration, it is actually encouraging migration, because after the young people have been given skills, after the young people have been trained, there are no jobs for them. And then they feel they should look elsewhere where they can use those skills. So they end up trying to go again to migrate. They have tried to have border controls. Instead, they are trying to have alternative routes. So a lot of money has been spent by the European Union. It put aside about 900 euros for that program, and it has been going on for about 5 years now. But when they have evaluated it recently, they found that, yes, it has provided opportunities for the young people, but those opportunities have not been utilized in the mother countries because the opportunities are not there in those mother countries. So those ones who have been skilled, they have ended up again also migrating. It is as if now they are training people so that they can migrate.
That's quite interesting. Nelly, despite all these many young Africans lacking jobs and lacking economic stability, taking off from the continent, there are a flood of Asians, Chinese, in many countries now are flooding the continent. Some estimates put them at 5 million. They are Indians. They are many people flooding back to Africa. That seems to be ironic.
Yeah, it is quite ironic that while many Africans feel that the continent has no opportunity, we see that there are many other international migrants who are coming into Africa and are residing in Africa. And we see that the number has been growing by an average of 3% per annum of migrants from European countries, North America, Asia, Australian, Chinese. And for them, they're finding that Africa provides them a decent living outside the country of origin. And most of these are, as much as most of these come as expatriates, some just come as individual investors. And they are making a living, and a very decent living here. So it raises the question that how come for those born in the continent, it is so hard to make ends meet, and they feel like they have to leave the country for them to enjoy or have a decent income, while many, many others keep on coming into Africa, and they are making a lot of money. Some are engaged in oil exploration through multinational companies. Others are engaged in mining, the gold, diamond, and copper. Others work for international organizations in health services and even conservation. And then there are also those in telecommunication, banking, healthcare, and many, many other places. So we're seeing that, yes, Africa has remained elusive in terms of opportunities for its people, but for the foreigners, somehow there are incentives given for them to be able to live comfortably and work decently and earn high incomes. And perhaps this is what has contributed to the rising inequities when you look at developed and developing countries, because those from developed countries come in, make their money, and most times they still bank it outside there. The migrants who live at the continent, they go there, work, and get in so many jobs so that to make ends meet. And then at the end of the day, yes, they do remittances back home, but mainly the contribution they make to the countries of where they've migrated to is immense. In terms of the contribution to labor, like I said, in terms of research, because even records show that most of the research papers and the new knowledge has come from African scientists who work outside their own African countries. And so this new knowledge, when the Africans contributed when they're out there, they're not credited. It belongs to where they've gone. And we even see that many of these developed countries, they put incentives in terms of scholarships for Africans, where many go there for their higher studies. And once they're there, whatever innovation they contribute to research, it ends up benefiting the countries who hosted them. So we see that as we progress, it is time that the African Union really looked at this issue and perhaps come up with a holistic framework that will try to regulate and even ensure that the brain drain does not harm the Africa as a whole.
I see. Suleiman, talking of incentives to foreigners to come to Africa, there are several countries that are actually giving out arable land to foreigners to cultivate, to use. and which was and agriculture was the stable occupation for many Africans, and some even the those who come to Africa can't even go to retail business, the type of things that locals could have done, but that seems to be okay, it appears.
That is why the whole continent, especially the progressive people, was so excited about Magufuli in Tanzania, a man who could examine a loan from China and then tell them, I don't want that loan because it does not benefit my people. Most of African countries have not reached that level. Instead, many African rusted leaders, especially the dictators, especially those who have stayed for more than 10 years, those who are rusted, they have lost, they have mortgaged the countries. You find that a foreigner is treated better than an indigenous African. As you have said, a foreigner has got more privileges than a local person. Any local small entrepreneur, small business, you would need some capital to start a business. You need some capital to buy your goods. You need a place to rent. You need, if you look in countries, for example, like Uganda, until recently, rent for business was being paid in dollars. It doesn't matter what the size of the place you are renting, they were paying in dollars. Who, an African, can afford those? Number two, when you look at a country like Uganda and so many African countries, the number of taxes which the traders are supposed to pay leaves them with nothing to take home. Number three, as you have said, the environment which is created, the cost of electricity, the cost of everything. So you find that citizens or indigenous people within their own countries, they can't manage. But the foreigners, some of the taxes are waived. Some of the taxes, they don't pay them. Some of the places, as you say, they are given at subsidized prices. They can be they are able to buy land. Some land they are given free to establish their farms, which cannot be given to the local people. So the local people are not going away. The young people are not going away because they don't want to stay in the countries. The conditions that are prevailing in many African countries don't encourage them to start business, don't encourage them to run business, don't encourage them to survive within those particular countries. That is why some of them are left with no alternative but to die on the high seas.
Briefly, Nelly, there is this element also of these some corporations, like especially China, when they come to construct bridges and roads and airports, they bring their own people to come and to do even the menu jobs, and they don't give them to locals. Briefly, what do you say about that? Briefly, very briefly.
Unfortunately, that's the scenario. And what has come out is that Chinese prefer using their locals to construct because they say these locals, people who, if they are not doing this kind of job here, they will be in prison. And so for them to contribute to the state, they are brought to Africa so that they can engage in these manual jobs, but which is again unfair to the locals because you come in to construct something in our country, we should benefit as locals. And again, we see that many of these Chinese have taken up jobs like when they are out there, because they are not engaging in construction work, they are hawking. And again, they are able to get goods from their country at a good price, and now they displace even the hawkers who are engaged in that job in their own country. So the iniquities will continue, unfortunately, and this time that Africa relooked at its potential and tried to harness what it has and be able to ensure that it uses its youth well and gives them opportunities that will make them stay. Because the brain drain that comes from migration is not helping Africa at all.
Briefly, Suleiman, 30 seconds. What should be the solution then?
So long as you don't have governments which are inclusive, where people are free to express themselves, so long as you don't have governments which are accountable, where you have got a parliament where people can represent their views, where you've got a parliament which can consider the fate of the citizens, so long as you don't have democratic institutions where people can express their views, where people can be able to talk about taxation, can be able to talk investment, you will not have a dent into the migration. The migration is an indictment. It shows the type of leadership which we have on the continent. A rusted leadership, uncaring leadership, a leadership which is aloof to the needs of the people, especially the young people. That is what Tshisekedi said in the Africa-France conference. Tshisekedi in the France-African conference, which has just been held in France, Tshisekedi said that much as the African countries are crying for assistance from the European and developed countries, that assistance will not help unless the African countries and leaders themselves improve on the issues of governance, on the issues of economic policies. They will not make a dent. On its own, will not help African countries unless we improve our leadership and the governance system.
I see. Well, gentlemen and lady, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to Nelly Mora Nyangorora, Nairobi-based independent journalist. Nelly, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much again for hosting me.
You're very much welcome. And thanks, Suleiman Mugula in Durban.
It is always a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Always. And that's all we have for tonight. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You just go to our main website at voanews.com, click on programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks once again for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpogam, wishing you all the best.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Hello, I'm Peter Clote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Here's one of the stories we will be covering on this Sunday. Political parties demand an international inquiry into violence blamed on security forces during the recent protests in Eswatini. We'll have details. Tune in. You'll be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music quest hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.